You know, as I studied for this passage and for the message this week, I was gripped by a quote from an old missionary, Leslie Newbegin. He served in India for many years and then came back and served as a missionary in his Western context as well. And he wrote these words. He said, "The gracious indwelling of God with his people is not an invitation to settle down and forgetting the rest of the world. It is a summons to mission. That is why God graciously dwells with his people, to summon us to mission." It means that following Jesus means participation in his ongoing mission and purpose for the world. Leslie Newbegin, of course, was not the first to point this out. He didn't stumble on something new in Christianity, that we are summoned to mission. It was Jesus himself that said to his followers, "Peace be with you, as the Father has sent me, so I am sending you." Jesus is sending you, disciple. So as Christians, we are discipled and sent by Jesus on a mission-orientated life. We have a purpose, we have a mission for being Christian. And Jesus reminds his disciples again this morning of their mission way of life. And he does this using the imagery of a vine. But notice then, when Jesus uses this imagery of a vine, he's not simply using it to make a wonderful farming illustration to make the point that he is sending disciples on mission in the world. Jesus was very specific. He said, "I am the true vine. I am the true vine." Now think about this. If all Jesus wanted was a memorable illustration about discipleship and mission in the world, why not just say, "I am like a vine"? Right? I'm like the vine, and this is why this illustration matters. Why be so insistent on being the true vine? Why that clarification? Well, to a Jew, as Jesus' first disciples were, the image of a vine was symbolic of your people. And that is to say, a vine to the Jewish people is what a kiwi or a fern is to us as New Zealanders, right? It is a collective symbol for us as a people. We identify with it. And you find this in several Old Testament passages where this vine is the collective symbol of the Jewish people. And for instance, commemorating their journey out of slavery from Egypt, Psalm 80 reads as follows. It says, "Restore us, O God of hosts. Let your face shine that we may be saved. You brought a vine out of Egypt." So he's collectively speaking of Israel there. "You brought a vine out of Egypt. You drove out the nations and planted it. You cleared the ground for it. It took deep root and filled the land." So if Israel, the nation, was depicted or collectively symbolized by a vine, and now Jesus says, "I am the true vine," you have to ask yourself, what is Jesus implying? What is he saying? What does he want his disciples to hear from him at that moment? It turns out Jesus was teaching his disciples that he is the true expression of what the nation Israel was always supposed to be. He is the true expression of Israel's purpose in the world, to be a light to the nations, to bring blessing and the knowledge of God to other people. But of course, as Israel's history shows, they abdicated that calling to be this mission-orientated people, to be this going light to the nations kind of people. They abdicated that role because of continued disobedience collectively, abandoning the Lord through unfaithfulness and taking up the idolatry of the nations around them instead of being faithful to the Lord. And so Jesus' statement here says to us that Jesus is now taking up and superseding the role of old Israel. He is taking up their mission as the true vine, the true Israel. And he is gathering now a community of people and disciples to join him on that mission in the world. He is the true vine. He is the true Israel. He is superseding their purpose in the world, and we are his disciples who join him on that mission. So if you're a Christian this morning, this is where you find yourself in Jesus' story. This is where your story connects with Jesus. You're being discipled by him and called into participation in his mission. But that brings a question, I think. If we are called into a mission way of life with Jesus, my question is, how on earth am I supposed to do this? I live in New Zealand, in the back end of the world, really, aren't we? So isolated here. How are we supposed to do life and mission with Jesus? His first disciples may have asked the question, look, we hold no political power, and we currently live under foreign military occupation under the Romans. How on earth are we supposed to do any kind of mission way of life comparable to the Israel of old? How are we supposed to be a light to the nations when we can't even have light in our own nation, right? Well, we can't even do anything of significance as we are under foreign military rule and holding no political power. They were in obvious need of assistance, as are we. And to that end, Jesus gives them a number of tools in which to become these effective disciples on mission with him in the world. And the tools that we're going to focus on from this passage are these: pruning, abiding, and prayer. We'll just look at those three this morning. Pruning, abiding, and prayer as tools for becoming effective disciples on mission with Jesus. Let's begin with the tool of pruning. If we stick with that imagery of a vine, Jesus said, every branch of mine that does not bear fruit, he takes away. And every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes, that it may bear more fruit. The orchardists among us would appreciate that imagery, I'm sure. Notice how Jesus makes this wonderful distinction here between branches that do not bear fruit and branches that do. One kind of branch needs removal. The other just needs some care and attention. And Jesus wants his people to see themselves in either one of these two categories, either needing removal or needing care and attention. If we show no signs of development toward the mission Jesus sends us on, if we repeat the mistakes of old Israel and be unfaithful continually and disobey the Lord continually and fall for the idolatry of the nations around us, Jesus says we require removal because there is no future for us with Jesus, the true vine. It makes no sense for us to remain attached if we do not share his mission. It's a sobering thought, I think. On the other hand, there are branches that bear fruit. These are in need of occasional pruning, much like a wine grower trims back their vines in order to maximize the quality and the yield of the next harvest. You know, sometimes I remember last year driving out to the Arboretum just on the outside of town here, and there's a couple of vineyards there, and they look dead naked after a good pruning. I mean, it just sticks in the ground, right? It just looks so depleted after that fullness of a great harvest. And it reminds me of these things that Jesus says, that there is pruning needed in order to increase the yield at the next harvest. It would have been a familiar picture to Jesus' disciples when he spoke like this about vines being pruned, you know, being cut back in order for the next season to be a fruitful one for them. So Jesus, by using this imagery, was preparing his disciples for the potential of seasons of pruning coming their way. And this pruning under the careful and skillful hand of God is not intended to destroy them, but to prepare them for future fruitfulness. So in practical terms, look, if your Christian experience just seems a little barren at the moment, if you're longing for greater fruitfulness in your life but not seeing it right now, it may be, that it's not because you're being unfaithful to God, but that he is currently pruning you. He is currently preparing you for future fruitfulness. It may be that. So pruning is a tool, spiritually speaking, which prepares us to be effective disciples on mission with Jesus. The second tool Jesus gave us for effective mission is abiding. Have a look at verse 4 with me. Jesus says the following: "Abide in me and I in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit by itself unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me." And we come now to that point where Jesus reveals some limitation of our humanity at this point. We cannot bear fruit unless we abide in him. We lack the ability to be effective Christians if we do not abide. So Jesus' meaning is clear here. If we have any hope of being effective disciples on mission with him, abiding is essential. It's not the extra of Christian life, it is the Christian life. But what does it mean to abide? And when was the last time you used the word abide in a conversation? I can't remember the last time I used the word abide in a conversation with someone. So what does Jesus mean here? The word itself means to stay or remain or to reside. And it carries the sense of continuing in a certain condition, state, or activity. In other words, it is the ongoing and fruitful connection between believer and Jesus that we're talking about here. Staying connected to Jesus. And which is why the imagery of a vine is so utterly helpful to us, isn't it? The connectedness of branches to a vine. It speaks so well to this very word of abiding. We are reminded that as a branch is dependent on its connection to the vine for its fruitfulness, so disciples of Jesus are dependent on their connection with Jesus for their fruitfulness. And at the same time, Jesus reciprocates this connectedness to us. He supplies the resources and nourishment needed to be effective disciples on mission with him. But what does that mean in practical terms? We might have a better grasp now of what the word abide means, but how do we do this thing called abiding? After all, how are we going to abide with a person? Jesus says, abide with me. How are we supposed to abide with a person who at this time in history is not physically present to us? Right? It's not like we're going to go knock on Jesus' door this afternoon and say, can we hang out? He is not physically present to us this way at this point in history. So how do we abide if we can't go have coffee together? Right? Jesus, ever mindful of our concerns, clarifies in verse 10 to tell us how we're supposed to abide. How is it that we're supposed to remain connected to him even though he is not physically present to us? He clarifies in verse 10 and says, if you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love. If you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love. Isn't it interesting that Jesus points out that this is the same way that he abided with the Father in his earthly ministry? That he says, look, the way I remained connected to my Father is by obeying his commandments. That's how I did abiding. And now Jesus says, this is the way that you're going to have to do abiding with me. There's going to have to be an obedience, a tangible obedience, to remain in this abiding way of life. Now, I know full well that when it comes to talk of command keeping in the Christian life, even us seasoned Christians or new Christians or wherever you find yourself this morning still questioning, when you're hearing talk about command keeping, to some of us that just sounds like nails on a chalkboard. We just have a really strong reaction towards Christians who start talking about keeping commands. It grates us deeply. We have strong reactions to these words. After all, we're all very much influenced and nurtured in a worldview that says our feelings, not our actions, determines what is true or what is right in the world. And Jesus corrects this kind of worldview, this imbalanced worldview. He says to us in the text, you can see this for yourself. He says, if you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love. If you keep my commandments, not just if you feel like you're connected to me, if you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love. The action precedes the feeling is what Jesus is teaching here, right? If you keep my commandments, the action, then you will abide in my love, the feeling. And we all know this from Christian experience, don't we? I mean, often when we feel the furthest away from God is when we are the most disobedient to the commands of Jesus. I know this. I suspect that some of you who have walked with Jesus know this as well. That the minute we feel so utterly disconnected from God and Jesus, the one who gave himself for us, It's when there is tangible sin in our lives that we need to repent of. We make no effort to go to church. We make no effort to read our Bibles. We make no effort to pray. And then we wonder why we're so disconnected from Jesus, why we know him so superficially. And Jesus is just pointing that out. Just saying, if you keep my commandments, there is life there. There is restoration of connectedness with Jesus there for you. Take it up. Take it up as the tool by which you become an effective disciple on mission with Jesus. It is there for your good. So that's our second tool. To be an effective disciple on mission with Jesus. So lastly now, let's turn our thoughts to prayer. Prayer, Jesus says, is another means, another tool, along with pruning and abiding, which will make us effective disciples on mission with Jesus. Take a look at Jesus' words, verses 7 through to 8. If you abide in me and my words abide in you, ask whatever you wish, that's prayer, and it will be done for you. By this my Father is glorified, that you bear much fruit, and so prove to be my disciples. First things first. Don't assume that Jesus is advertising a snatch-and-grab approach to prayer here. When Jesus says, ask for whatever you wish, he's not saying Jesus is just a lolly scramble, that the Father is having a lolly scramble, right? Ask whatever you wish. I want my Mercedes. I want a bigger TV. My wife knows that I do. It's just not like, that's not what Jesus is saying here by ask whatever you wish. Whatever you wish is controlled by a preceding verse or a preceding statement, right? It's not just thrown out there as it doesn't just cover everything that you wish for. It is controlled by a preceding statement, which is, if you abide in me, and my words abide in you. It means that we're praying for the kinds of things that would sprout from an abiding in Jesus' way of life. If we are abiding in him, whatever we wish for will be done for us. That is true. Jesus says so. But sometimes our abiding is just a mess, isn't it? So sometimes we get this wrong. We think that Jesus means that lotto winnings is included in the whatever we wish, right? Our abiding is not too strong. We think if we win lotto, we'll be effective disciples. And Jesus is just saying, maybe conceive of the idea that winning lotto is not the pathway towards effective discipleship. So no, you're not winning lotto this week. But maybe abiding in Jesus and his word abiding in us will sprout a different kind of prayer. A less self-centered kind of prayer, a more mission-orientated kind of prayer, which is what Jesus has in mind here with whatever you wish. Praying a mission-minded prayer. That'll be done for you. So maybe your abiding in Jesus and your mission-minded prayer might look something like this. You're heading into work. You've got something like 8 to 10 hours ahead of you at work. You're about to get out of your car. And by faith, you're just looking to the Lord and saying, Lord, I have a long and honest day's work ahead of me. Even so, will you give me an opportunity to speak about you to someone who does not yet trust you, or someone who is struggling to trust you. And then you wait on the Lord to answer that mission-minded prayer and see what he does with your day. I have lots of stories of those kinds of prayers being answered from my own life and experience. I commend it to you. I commend praying a mission-minded prayer before you start your day's work and just seeing if the door towards evangelism would open for you that day, and a mission-minded prayer might be answered for you. It seems to me these are the kinds of prayers which align with our calling as disciples of Jesus on mission with him. It's the kind of fruit that branches of the true vine would actually produce. Moreover, Jesus goes on to say that these kinds of prayers delights the Father's heart. It delights the Father to answer these kinds of prayers. By this, my Father is glorified, he said. What a wonderful motivation for praying these mission-minded prayers. Look, we followed Jesus' teaching this morning, looking at three tools to become more effective disciples on mission with Jesus in the world. And these three tools are these. There would be pruning in order to maximize our future fruitfulness. There would be obedient abiding for us to grow as effective disciples. And there would be prayer by which disciples of Jesus would glorify God. But perhaps today, this morning, there are still some of us here who are rolling our eyes and think, man, there are 1,000 other places I'd rather be this morning than to be discipled by Jesus through his word. There are 1,000 other more joy-filled things than I can think of doing than sitting in a gathered community of disciples. If that's where your thinking is at, Jesus offers you a word of grace and invitation to consider. Jesus finishes off with his disciples and he says, "These things I have spoken to you, that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be full." Jesus teaches his followers to be effective disciples, not because he begrudges them joy in their lives, but because he is the ultimate source of meaningful joy in life. It seems strange that Christians talk this way, but an old Christian helped us to think through this, to think about what it means to experience joy as a Christian on mission in the world. And this old saint, he said this, "God is the highest good of the reasonable creature." That's how older saints spoke, right? Of the reasonable creature, speaking of human beings. "God is the highest good of the reasonable creature. The enjoyment of him is the only happiness with which our souls can be satisfied. Better than fathers and mothers and husbands and wives and children and the company of any or all earthly friends. These are but shadows, but the enjoyment of God is the substance. These are but scattered beams, but God is the sun. These are but streams, but God is the fountain. These are but drops, but God is the ocean." When we look for joy in life outside of Jesus' gracious summons to be his disciples on mission with him, we find diluted joy at best. So Jesus' summons to a mission's way of life turns out to also be a summons to your joy. Hear him again. I have spoken to you that your joy may be full. Amen.